copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Hello, everybody. Entertainment Media and the Good Life, an analysis and a Christian response. Thanks for making this session a priority in your busy schedule. I'm Morgan, as you know from the introduction, and I live in Kristiansand with my husband, Lars. I work as an associate professor at NLA University College, and as well being a team and production director in Damaris, Norway. And I'll do my best at this session, as in every session here at ELF, to make it short and sweet and still meaningful. How are you? Happy? Living in a good situation, having a good life in the midst of the pandemic? I trust that you do, in the real sense of the word, the real sense of what a good life is all about and what happiness is all about. Because quite understandably, articles, debates, podcasts, research all over the world now focus on the COVID-19 and the good life and how it affects us. And of course, it's highly significant, this aspect, when it comes to annual surveys of happiness powered by the data from Gallup World Poll, as you see here on the PowerPoint. And it's quite ironic, isn't it, that amongst all the cancellations due to the pandemic, we also find this very conference on what's in a good life in my own hometown here in Kristiansand, which hopefully will take place in June 22 instead. My paper is to be linked to our topic of today, by the way. But what's in a good life? What is a good life, really? Such a universal question being addressed from different angles and for different age groups. Here, aimed for teaching kids by the BBC. Why? Because kids, just as you and me, get so many images of what a good life is all about from the media. Images, impressions, just underneath the surface in the stories, often related to wealth, fame, and happiness, as we see pointed out here. What about Disney, by the way? Providing kids all over the world with key messages such as, my dreams and my will. Be kind, but be true to yourself. Follow your heart. Don't give up. You'll get a reward. Have courage. Have faith. You deserve to be happy. Sometimes these messages are spoken out clearly by Disney, but most often we have to listen more carefully to take notice. But the messages that are there, all related to a good life. Some of them to be confirmed, others to be challenged. What about this lyrics then? 21st Century Girl, sung by Willow Smith, age 11 at the time. What does a beautiful life look like from this perspective? A life of independence, no boundaries, no rules. That makes a happy life. Or this longing for happiness makes the running theme in so many stories and movies, literature, music, television series, etc. It might not meet us up front immediately, as in this well-known movie, The Pursuit of Happiness, starring Willow's father and brother, by the way. The movie being based on a true story about a homeless salesman in San Francisco becoming a highly successful businessman. The story seems to point to one of the ancient classical stories retold by Socrates, called The Choice of Heracles, or Hercules. A story about young Hercules, who wants happiness and is offered a choice between vice and virtue, between a life of pleasure or one of hardship and honor. The old philosopher underlines that we are all pursuing happiness. That is the hoped-for destination on everyone's road whether you choose vice or virtue. So this pursuit is definitely there from the very outset in this movie. But really, the theme is very often there in stories that will capture our imagination, regardless of our choice of platform. Powerful stories, whether they are wonderful or disturbing. Storytelling is the most powerful way to put ideas into the world today, said the famous storyteller Robert McKee. And we understand what he is thinking of. And whatever genre or platform, all kinds of stories teach, whether the storyteller intends them to or not, to quote author Philip Pullman. So when faced with messages from entertainment media, we might ask ourselves, what are we actually taught about happiness, about the good life? And to figure that out, ask yourself, what do the characters long for? Where do they search? What do they hope for? And what seems to be part of the answer? The movie Eat, Pray, Love with Julia Roberts, based on the best-selling novel by Elizabeth Gilbert, makes a good start for anyone who is not used to watching movies with these glasses on. After her divorce, the major character Liz asks in the midst of depression, what's the point in life? She runs away from everything and embarks on a journey across the world, searching for happiness and fulfillment. And the film portrays her quest for self-discovery. In her travels, she discovers pleasure in nourishment by eating in Italy, the power of prayer in India, and finally and unexpectedly for her, she says, I got inner peace and balance because I experienced love in Indonesia. So the movie, it received mixed reviews from the critics, but many of them found them quite superficial, the different answers and the story in the movie, but it was such a huge success, appealing to the general public. Why? I think the main reason being that it resonates with deep universal longings. We can identify with them. But what about the answers provided here? Where Liz seems to find the sort of meaning? Is this the self-realization that we would like to opt for? We are actually called to figure out what is this all about. That is what John Stott calls double listening to the word and to the world. He says, these voices will often contradict one another, but our purpose in listening to them both is to discover how they can relate to each other. So double listening is indispensable of Christian discipleship and Christian mission. So when we listen to the different answers given in Eat, Pray, Love, we really ought to ask ourselves how to evaluate, how to find points of contact, and how to realize what are the challenging answers here related to the biblical worldview. That is the double listening of John Stott. And as Christ's disciples, we are sent into the world, which includes a call to identify views of happiness and the good life held by people around us and told in the entertainment media. And then we are to tell a better story. Broadly speaking, there are two predominant myths about the good life that circulates around us in the Western society today. And they are really found in the entertainment media. The first is the myth position that says life of excess is the good life. The belief in happiness and fulfillment through technology, the availability and acquisition of wealth and possessions, upward social mobility and political influence, that's the life of excess, that's the good life. The second myth is the life of simplicity. That's a good life, a lot of people say. The belief that happiness and fulfillment are found in a life of simplicity, one with a minimum of possessions, that does not seek wealth or influence, but finds joy in connection to nature and service to others. And we meet these different shapes in media messages that are constantly surrounding us. And just briefly, related to being good, was used to the Greek, sorry, I think we should see one more thing, reminding ourselves that both these two myths relate happiness to the good life. And then we might wonder what is actually meant by the good life. And there we are. Happiness related to being good was used to translate the Greek eudaimonia and is still used in virtue ethics, meaning good with O and daimon meaning spirit. So happiness being good today, the meaning of happiness is more slippery, related to the Norse hap, which means chance or luck, and leads to a metric of feeling good. And that, of course, is what we see so much of in today's entertainment media and in today's culture. But we crave for happiness, don't we? And we don't have to go 10 years back. We'll just go to 2018 to find out that at Yale University, one of the most popular courses ever was called Psychology and the Good Life. And yet another free online version started last week. Whereas 10 years back, we got this wonderful, wonderful, popular book called The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin that ended up as a movement, and we see it all around us today. And I think that is why we shouldn't wonder when we go back to 2018 and find the most popular course ever at Yale University. And I wonder, what do you think of this heading? It's quite interesting, isn't it? Happiness and or the good life. That's actually a title of a lecture linked to this course given by Professor Santos together with two other professors. One, Professor Hurd from Divinity and Religious Studies, and Professor Kagan, who is a philosopher. And of course, when they ask happiness and or the good life, they refer to the view of happiness as feel good, coming from the Norse word. So a good life is a rich mixture of emotions, not just happiness alone, say Professor Santos. Whereas happiness, we need to stop pursuing happiness and reach for the good life, says Professor Hurd, stressing, for instance, that different things make different people happy and that the direct pursuit of happiness is self-defeating. And finally, a successful life is an ethical life, according to Professor Keegan, who points out that we should really opt for virtues to live a happy life, to live a good life. How then to build a bridge from the biblical worldview to these different viewpoints? How to confirm as well as challenge? That is, how to do this act of double listening? To me, I find an integrated worldview approach very helpful. Building on James Sayer's worldview definition, I've actually tried to figure out a tool that is of great help in order to dig into entertainment media and other texts to figure out what's actually being communicated. And James Sayer says, a worldview is a commitment, a fundamental orientation of the heart that can be expressed as a story, mind you, a story, or in a set of presuppositions which we hold about the basic constitution of reality and that provides the foundation on which we live and move and have our being. With that particular holistic view of our worldview, realizing to everyone that it's impossible not to have a sort of a faith, I've tried to figure out this useful tool, and I use it over and over again, and that's why I can say it's actually useful, where you try to figure out what's actually being observed, what's going on, what's being said and done in the movie, for instance, as we did just a couple of minutes ago with the Eat, Pray, Love. And thus, what pointers can be identified in the actual drama to underlying worldviews by identifying certain views of ethical values on humanity, on reality, and on faith. And faith then, in the sense of where one finds meaning, where to put one's trust. So everyone believes in something. So these four elements are core to every worldview, personal worldviews, as well as religious and ideologies, the traditions of worldviews. This is quite a well-known poster, isn't it? The highly popular movie, both for kids and adults, Soul, from Pixar Disney by Pete Docter. The story follows Joe Gardner, a middle school music teacher who seeks to reunite his soul and body after they are mysteriously separated. And that happened just before his big breakthrough as a jazz musician. "I was born to play," says Joe. He is fully convinced playing jazz is what I live for. He tells his mother just before the concert that he thinks will be his breakthrough. And he adds, "If I were to die now, my life wouldn't mean anything." So his identity is fully linked to playing the piano, playing jazz. This is meaning. This is the good life. This is happiness. This is self-realization. Follow your heart. Pursue your dream. The well-known Disney message. I won't spoil too much if you haven't watched the movie, but please watch it. Still, I want to point out the gap between "I'm born to play" early on in the movie and his statement at the very end of the film, when he has returned from the great before, he has been united with his body, he's back in life. Then, the only thing he's sure of is that he's going to live every minute. This film is about broadening the idea of a singular focus to thinking more widely about what life has to offer and what we have to offer life, says the director, Pete Docter. And the movie definitely encourages us to look up, look around, enjoy relationships, beauty, nature, life. And thereby, the movie opposes the individualism of today, at least from this perspective. And there are a lot of pointers to viewing career, achievements, money, etc., as emptiness, as meaningless. The character 22 in particular, illustrating the fight against nihilism. Everything is meaningless. And the answer in the film seems quite clear to me. Make a choice, open up, realize that life in itself is the meaning in life. That seems to be the proper spark that character 22 searched for and that for so long held her back from entering out our world. But from a biblical perspective, we notice that the movie doesn't give any reason for finding happiness and meaning by opening up towards others, towards life. We know that God has created the universe and clothed it in meaning, which can be found by everyone, providing hope for everyone. And further, the Bible tells us why relationships are important. But the fact that Soul points to both joy, the importance of joy, and the importance of relationships is a wonderful serve for us to point to the source for the deepest joy, happiness, and meaning found in the relationship with God our Father. So we have actually been given illustrations here of 2 out of 8 very common answers to the question about what makes me happy, What makes a good life? What makes it meaningful? Image, performances, relationships, possessions, experiences, explorations, both sexual and spiritual, and self-determination. So what about us? We are by no means immune. As Tim Keller reminds us here, if anything becomes more fundamental than God to our happiness, yours, mine, to our meaning in life, to our identity, then it is an idol. So I thought it would be good if we just for 10 minutes have breakout rooms and try to share with each other which three aspects regarding what makes a good life are the most challenging in your context. The aspects that we just pointed at, I had 8, and if you choose 3 of them and talk about what are the most challenging in your context, and how would you find the most appropriate way to address these challenges where you are?
And welcome back to the main session. We're almost all back together, and then you can begin again, Margoon.
Thank you. And I trust you had a lovely time talking things over, and maybe you would like just to stay on there, but I'm sorry we are here. No, I'm not sorry. What I'm sorry for is that we are not in the same room physically. Anyway, we will dig into, just for a tiny little bit, the Act 7 model, because identifying and utilizing points of contact and continuity between the biblical worldview and what's being communicated, the messages surrounding us, is vital. That's part of the double listening, of course. And just as much, it's important to identify and challenge point of tension and discontinuity, just as Paul did in Athens. And that is, I said short and sweet, I don't know, but I'm trying to give some examples, short and sweet, to be true to what I said immediately when we started this afternoon, so that we will point out some examples here relating to what seems to be revealed underneath the surface in the different entertainment media, when we focus on image, performances, relationships, possessions, experiences, personal explorations, and self-determination. Because we see deep longings for true identity, don't we? We find real community deep down there, a longing for the real community, that is, for deep joy and for authentic freedom. And here I use, as you see, the image of the open hand, because when talking about media stories, it's important to affirm these deep longings and go from there to the invitation to explore how a holistic biblical worldview fulfills these longings. So being short and sweet means that we go quickly, but still we give glimpses of, I think, quite well-known messages from your perspective as well. For instance, when Jesse G screams, just be true to who you are, seemingly opposing here to the pressure on presenting oneself with a certain image. I nearly left the real me on the shelf. Don't lose who you are in the blur of the stars. Seeing is deceiving, dreaming is believing. It's okay not to be okay. Sometimes it's hard to follow your heart. Tears don't mean you're losing. Everybody's bruising. Just be true to who you are. And in social media, young girls are thanking Jesse for helping them out from depression by underlining the fact that they are good enough and that hurting is part of life, really. I love this song. It's extremely relevant in today's youth and society. And being true to who you are and not hiding into the labels everyone expects from you to follow is everyone should live the life like that. Just because it hurts to do so isn't something bad. It just means you're living your life. I struggled with depression, and this song to me helped me to be more myself and to not let what others think of me get to my emotions. A longing for true identity behind image, etc. And I even couldn't quote it properly because I get emotional when it comes to seeing all these young girls, specifically girls, finding help in what Jessie D sings. But I wonder, does really Jessie D know who she is? Isn't this long-running Grey's Anatomy, now on Disney Plus Star, where the opening sequence goes like this, and I'm sure you have heard it so many times, you may know it by heart. No one believes their life will turn just okay. We all think we are going to be great. And from the day we decide to become surgeons, we are all filled with expectations. Expectations of the trials we will blaze, the people we will help, the difference we will make. Great expectations of who we will be, where we will go, and then we get there. The dream is this, that we'll finally be happy when we reach our goals. Heard that? Sure you have. If you haven't, go into Disney Plus and start watching again Grey's Anatomy. And in that particular series, a colleague of mine figured out that there is a tension between relationships and the focus on performances when they are to figure out where to anchor the identity and find meaning in life. And we could have spent a lot of sessions just digging into this particular series from this perspective of identity and true meaning in life. But we could also go to Justin Bieber, couldn't we? The highly popular song, Lonely. What if you had it all but nobody to call? Maybe then you'd know me, because I've had everything. The need for real community. You tick them off, don't you? And as the colleague of mine, Anne Solfrid Brennhoved, has pointed out over and over again, the list of videos marked by hashtag lonely and different synonyms just make us cry. Hashtag lonely, I'm lonely, loneliness, alone life, alone. And the artist Bni got an international breakthrough, really, on TikTok with the song Super Lonely, sad song. He went with the Kings. So what is this all about? As for Billie Eilish, the queen of Gen Z, she struggles with feelings of isolation, doesn't she? She's so open about it. And she chooses to be open about it in her lyrics. She often refers to dreams in the songs, and here she refers to a nightmare. She and her brother Phineas wrote this song because she had a dream that she killed herself, and nobody cared, neither family nor fans. The silver lining here is that Billie Eilish, she has her big brother by her side to help her when times are tough. What about the people you know and the people you don't know? The longing for fellowship. Television series for tweens portray this over and over again. And the first time I remember I heard the phrase, we'll be our own family, was actually in Dawson's Creek in the late 90s when analyzing the series. And it's still popular now on Netflix. We'll be our own family because the parents, the older folks, didn't take on the responsibility, the authority, the surge for helping me out. And of course, Friends illustrates this very well, and it's got this comeback, very popular among today's tweens. And most teenage series are in the same line. But there's also a tendency towards evaluating the extended nuclear family highly nowadays as in Modern Family. But I wonder, and I wondered even more when I dug into Modern Family, who are the authorities? Most often the younger generation. And again, this quest for meaning, belonging, finding a home. What's joy all about? What's real happiness all about? Russell Brand puts it like this: you start to realize that all other forms of happiness are temporary, conditional, transient, illusory forms of happiness, sexy happiness, druggy happiness, new jacket happiness. More than what? He says this in an interview after meeting with Dalai Lama in 2012, talking about spiritual quest in life and how meditation gives the proper happiness. So what's joy all about? What is real happiness all about? When listening to, for instance, this guy. Skam, the Norwegian teen drama television series about the daily life of high school teenagers in Oslo, could in itself serve as illustration for a lot of aspects related to our topic. The series became an international success that took NRK, or Norwegian Public Broadcaster, by surprise, and everyone by surprise. And I highly recommend you to find my colleague Anne Solfrid Brenhoff's lecture on Skam at Focal Online, by the way. It's brilliant. Each season here has focused on particular topics, ranging from relationship difficulties, identity, eating disorders, sexual assault, homosexuality, mental health issues, religion, and forbidden love. And of course, the very title, Skam, shame that is, points to an underlying longing for authentic freedom, which is one of the key longings that can be identified in entertainment media, as we saw earlier. So in different ways, the characters struggle with feeling shameful, not guilty, but shameful. As with Eve, feeling shameful about her loneliness when looking at social media, as well as feeling shameful when getting low grades. As illustrated here, where she has got a low mark on an essay on guilt, and she lies about it. Quite ironic, on guilt, because shame is the issue, not guilt, but how to be set free from shame. The key longings for true identity, real community, deep joy, and authentic freedom, they all reflect underlying perspectives and traits of worldviews, of course. Not the least, the ones of consumerism and materialism, individualism and subjectivism. And of course, it's so important to listen carefully to the longings underneath and reach out with the image of an open hand. But there's also a need for challenging the views and lifestyles of happiness and the underlying idolatry from the perspective of the biblical gospel. And we may say that Kardashians, for instance, may symbolize the importance of image, performance, success, belongings, as well as family and relationships for happiness and a good life. They portray that. But do you and I actually deal with the underlying perspectives in our teaching, where the different values are rooted? How do we challenge it in respect and clarify them in love? As with Disney, in the midst of all the good values in Disney, what are to be cherished and confirmed? When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. What then is a biblical perspective on the good life? It might be summarized in three key expressions, I think. Firstly, the image of God. We have been created with dignity to reflect God's goodness. Secondly, the indwelling love of Christ. We have come to Christ in faith, receiving forgiveness for sins and a calling to love God and others. And thirdly, the imitation of Christ. We are called to a life of purpose and service, reflecting the goodness of Christ. The indwelling of Christ, that's our blind spot as Christians. The good news is that there is more. It can be found not in the things of this world, not in science or nature or possessions or money or religion or pleasure, but in Jesus Christ. Nothing else will satisfy your heart. Works of self-giving love in self-grasping world are supernatural works. They are miracles, and they are symptomatic of the Christian life. You see where I quote from? This brand new book, Discovering the Good Life, by Tim Savage. He says that the human heart is always searching for satisfaction, always longing for the good life in the things in the world and in the things we love. And when we become bearers of Christ's love, we become beacons of Christ's love. Love cannot be held in. It's like a river. Love is cascades out of the Christian and into the lives of others. That is the secret. That is the answer to be in the image of God. We have been created with dignity to reflect God's goodness. The indwelling love of Christ, we have come to Christ in faith, receiving forgiveness for sins and a calling to love God and others. And thirdly, the imitation of Christ. We are called to a life of purpose and service reflecting the goodness of Christ. And if we then end by quoting Tim Keller, who says that this book is an apologetic for the Christian life in response to a culture dedicated to seeking personal fulfillment, but finding that very thing more and more elusive. A book worth recommending as we ask God's guidance and blessing upon our lives and being salt and light, providing people around us with a better story on where to find happiness and what a good life is all about. So run for the Amazon and buy the book as soon as possible. It's highly recommended. And as for now, I'd love to pray for us, really. Heavenly Father, thank you for having given us the proper happy life in you, the proper identity, the proper findings in who we are in you. Loved and created by your Father, loved by you, bestowed by you. And I just pray that all of us in our daily life, in our daily walk with you, will be salt and light and tell a better story about who you are, what life is all about, and mostly live in that story, dwelling in you, that nothing else is more important to us than be in you. Because if anything else becomes more important, then it turns into idolatry. Heavenly Father, protect us, bless us. Amen.